is only the second time I've conducted a church service in the year 2009. So if I don't do it right, please forgive me. I am grateful to you, to many of you, for the support and encouragement and your prayers during a very difficult time. I will, for the benefit of the youth group, show you my scar for a dollar a peek. It's quite interesting looking in the mirror every morning. It still takes a while, I think, to get used to it. And taking a while to get used to it is where we see the church in the story that we have just the tail end of in our first lesson. And it seems to me it's so important to understand what's happening there that I have to tell you about the beginning of Acts 10 before we get to those verses. Because the early church, very naturally, was a Jewish group. Very naturally, on Pentecost, all the people who were converted were already Jewish. The leader was Jesus' brother, James. And there were 12 who had worked very closely with Jesus. It was a tight-knit group. And everybody was pretty much the same. One day, Peter gets a note from a man named Cornelius, who is a Roman. Those are the bad guys, right? Scenario. Who believes in the God of Israel, but from a distance, and has heard there's something up with Jesus, and invites Peter to come tell him what's going on with Jesus. And this is an enormous crisis for Peter. Peter is an Orthodox member of a religious group, Judaism, where it's a sin to go inside the house of a non-Jew. And that would still be true today for really hyper-Orthodox Jews. So Peter's thinking maybe we can talk on the porch or something. But he sets out very reluctantly to go to Cornelius' house. And on the way, he's tired and sits down under a tree to have a nap. And in his nap, he has this dream of being hungry, and they're coming down from heaven, a huge picnic. It's got everything on it he can't eat. There are shrimp cocktails. There are crab cakes. There are pig's knuckles. You get the picture. And he tells, in his dream, he tells the angels, take it away. And the voice of God is heard to say, what I have declared clean, you may not call unclean. Now, the writer of Acts draws a veil at this point. We don't know if Peter has his first ham sandwich or not. But he does now have the message that he should really give it his all in trying to speak to Cornelius and, of course, to his household. So he goes, and with what has to be great reluctance, steps over that threshold into the house of the Gentile and tells the story. And that's where we pick up today. He's talking, they're believing, and the Holy Spirit comes on them and they start speaking in other tongues and dancing, and I think they weren't Episcopalians in those days, but we hadn't invented that yet. But they are full of the proof but the Spirit is with them. Now, the way Christians had experienced conversion so far, there was coming to believe, there was baptism, and then there might be signs of the Spirit. This one point in the entire book of Acts, the Holy Spirit comes on people who've not yet been baptized. And the point of that was to get Peter to see, oh, well, if God declares them clean enough to have the Holy Spirit, I guess I better baptize them. So Cornelius the centurion and his household become the first little congregation of Gentile Christians. But Peter has just one more problem. He has to go back to headquarters and explain himself. And so how this chapter gets in the Bible and what follows is Peter makes this impassioned plea that the rest of the church recognize that when Jesus said he would draw the whole world to himself, that was exactly what he meant. And so the Gentile mission begins to pick up a little more speed as an idea the church could handle. Now, why am I telling you all this? Well, first of all, for most of us sitting in the room, that story explains why we could be here in the first place. God had to take the early church and shake it a little bit, so that our ancestors, who were probably busy praying to trees somewhere in Northern Europe, could be evangelized. So we owe our own Christian identity to what happened in this story with the bursting open of the church's boundaries. Something else is going on as well. It reminds each of us that there are people we would rather think are somewhere else this morning. Think of the person in Tawanda you least like to see in your church. And if there isn't anybody, that's fine. God love you. Who would you least like to see your rector having lunch with? The church historically has drawn all kinds of artificial boundaries. I'm old enough to remember when in Lancaster, in my denomination, there were churches for people of different races. I'm a historian enough to know that the very East Coast part of the Episcopal Church made really unkind comments about this area and west of the church because in the 19th century it was welcoming so many European immigrants. So even in this country we've had to lose our Englishness or Scottishness to be more open and receive the people who are really there. And that's a problem, of course, we will always have because we're a group of human beings and human beings draw boundaries. But there is one third and final point, and I say this especially to those of you being confirmed or received today. There is no moment when you are outside the scope of God's love. There's no moment when I am outside the scope of God's love. Sometimes we think we've done such a terrible job of life. Sometimes we just see our children have grown up just like us. Don't ask me how I know that. Or sometimes it all seems very futile. We didn't get where we wanted to go. And we really feel, and you know that word, God forsaken. Anybody who's never felt God forsaken, please raise your hand. Okay. So since we all know that feeling, it's important to remember this story. The But that's an illusion. That's a trap. That there is no moment when we are beyond the embrace of God's love. We may need to remind ourselves of that and move more closely into it. But there is no moment. I like to tell little kids, you'll never be talented enough to do something that God would stop loving you. But it remains true for all of us. So the church got the message, didn't it? And Christianity became a major missionary religion. Who's to say it can't again? Who's to say it can't again? I think we're in a moment of great opportunity for that. And we have a story today that reminds us not just of the power of the Spirit, if we pick up the challenge, but also the breadth of the results God will bring. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.